Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. I'm Dave Marish, sitting in for Mary Charlotte. Today I'll be talking with two pianists, the New Mexico jazz musician John Rangel and the 2013 Van Cliburn Award winner Vadim Kholodenko. John Rangel is a dynamic and versatile pianist-composer who's performed with the likes of Nat Adderley, Sam Rivers, Ravi Coltrane, Rosemary Clooney, Billy Higgins, and many others. He'll be performing with an expanded version of his tribute trio this Saturday at the South Broadway Cultural Center in Albuquerque as part of a birthday celebration of the late great modern jazz quartet pianist John Lewis, who grew up in the Duke City. I spoke with John Rangel last week in the KSFR studios. John, I guess it's particularly appropriate that Albuquerque should honor John Lewis because he was literally, and maybe even more than literally, a child of Albuquerque.
Totally. He wasn't born in Albuquerque, but he was definitely raised in Albuquerque, and he went to University of New Mexico and you know, I guess he majored in music and anthropology or something and then discovered that anthropology didn't pay well, which I'm trying to figure out how jazz paid better than anthropology, but I don't know. We'll figure that out someday. But it was very fortunate that he was there and for us. And I think it's really great on his birthday that we're celebrating his life and the influence of Albuquerque in his life by doing our concert with the Tribute Trio Plus One.
John was born in Illinois. His dad died when he was two. His mother moved him where the family, her family, was in Albuquerque, and she passed away when he was four. And essentially his grandmother and a whole bunch of aunts and uncles raised him.
Wow.
And clearly he flourished. He benefited by this family raising, but I was thinking one of the things that is characteristic of John Lewis's playing is how orderly it is. And for a kid who grows up doubly orphaned, moving among relatives, you can see where order would be a particular value to him.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have a parallel in my life. Not that my family was, you know, separated or whatever at a young age, but I loved Bach's music and preludes and fugues and all that stuff. I still play those every day. And when I've heard John Lewis for the first time and I saw this sort of crossover classical thing that he was doing, to me it reminded me of what you're saying, just that sense of everything having a reason and even if it's a dissonance, you know, having these resolutions was a really beautiful sensibility that he had in his playing and his writing. So I definitely agree with you. There's something that happens when you come from that background that you seek that in a way.
Of course, the whole concept of third stream music was really designed around John Lewis's early work with Orchestra USA and with Gunther Schuller. Mm. And probably as much as anybody, he succeeded in synthesizing the order and constructs of classical music with the freedom and swing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and like I said, he was sort of like you said, he's a pioneer in that. And it's just for me as a student of the music, it's a way sharer and saying, hey, check this out. You know, go listen to Bach and really look at the original work that Bach did with motivic development and species counterpoint and all that stuff, and just, you know, really bring that into your heart and to your mind so that you can do something with it. And one thing that I really enjoy about John Lewis, he didn't just play the original scores. He added his own. We take the chord progression, let's say, that Bach was utilizing, and then he would improvise over it. And I was listening to one record today where he took a fugue and had it two violins and guitar, and you know, it just was really creative use of the ensemble, but then he could still go into the swing and still play you know, jazz, basically. You know, so there was enough for me as a jazz musician, enough for me as a classical musician, you know, to kind of really appreciate where he was coming from and how he was organizing these things. So anyway, it's a super, super honor for me to be able to play this music and to sort of celebrate his birthday on Saturday, May 3rd.
In preparing to do that, what have you learned about John Lewis? What's new in your knowledge of John Lewis? Because I'm sure you've been listening to him for years, but when you're preparing a tribute concert, you listen in a different way.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one thing is I selected a bunch of tunes that there was no music for, so I had to transcribe them, and I gave a couple assignments to Sam, the vibrist who's playing with us, Sam Lunt, and to transcribe a couple of tunes, and Michael Glenn transcribed a couple of tunes, and I transcribed a couple of tunes, and in that way we're all really digging into the ear part of it and just what that means, but also just how he created new structures out of this understanding that he had, you know, with the sort of third stream concept, you know, that he was bringing to the world, and just, okay, he understands these concepts now. He brings those into the MJQ or just even, you know, the trio, the John Lewis trio stuff. You know, I love that. It just, to me, I don't know, it's like doing homework. You know, if you're going to go study mathematics, you got to go through the equations that the great minds, you know, put together. Or if you're studying music, you know, you have to go through and say, what did they actually do? You know, like not just read a book, a summary, the cliff notes, if you will, you know, the, what this person was about, but actually, you know, what do they actually play on the records and go through with your fingers and see what it feels like and listen. Just try to absorb the sensibilities and the intelligence that he used to navigate, you know, this in a different way. Because, I mean, people say he was influenced by Oscar Peterson. I don't really hear much of that, you know. I don't know if that's right. Maybe it's true. Maybe he liked Oscar Peterson, but I didn't get that. You know, when I listen to him, he's more reminds me more of Bach, really, you know, where he'll take ideas, develop them over a longer period of time, and he's very economical. Not a lot of busy stuff, you know, going on. And yet he could play. He could fly, you know, if he wanted to play some fast, you know, bebop type of lines, he could do that. But it was all this beautiful, thoughtful, developed, like you said earlier, sort of sense of order, always in his improvisations. I was watching this video with Barry Harris and Billy Taylor and John Lewis, and one thing that was really neat is Billy Taylor says, "You always coming up with something new," you know, and I was listening, he did a solo version of Django, and I was listening to it, and it just sounded so fresh. Like he didn't do any of the chords that he normally plays. And I just went, you know, so it's in the fake book, it's, you know, there's charts, and yet that's not what he actually did. So for me, like preparing for this is really trying to see, you know, where was his mind at, you know, what was he, what kind of man was he, and how did he approach being in the moment of creativity and spontaneity and jazz? You know, that to me is how I look at all these players that I kind of study, is, you know, what does it take to be in that place, you know, and sit in that chair and think the way you're thinking.
So. Like two players whom he didn't particularly resemble, Thelonious Monk and Ahmad Jamal, John Lewis made each note count, and a lot of his work is very much one note at a time. As a pianist, in thinking about John Lewis, was part of the discipline playing less?
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously I have a joke with my students, and I call it the case of the runaway fingers. It's very easy when you're practicing a lot to allow your fingers to kind of blaze a path, and there's a sort of a lack of consciousness or a lack of connectedness to the actual lines and the phrases. And like I said earlier, John Lewis is amazing at developing ideas over a longer period of time in a very patient fashion. And I find that to be very much like Bach, you know, but also just a very difficult thing, especially in this day and age of flashy kind of, you know, musicians, you know, who are trying to get known, so they have to play a lot of stuff, you know. And so it's very easy to overlook him as a really fine pianist. I mean, Tommy Flanagan was similar, you know, and just real economical, not, you know, he played not the minimum, but just, you know, let you know that he knew what was going on, but there was always like plenty of room, you know, to think.
Well, it ain't always true. Sometimes less is less, but John Lewis proved that less could be more. Another overlooked aspect of his playing, because he was musical director of the MJQ, he was a composer, he had an orchestra, he taught. People tend to forget he was actually treasured by musicians as an accompanist. Yeah. Ella Fitzgerald used him for years. Mm. Charlie Parker was delighted to have him play on a date, which means that in addition to all of his orderliness and compositional sense, he was a listener.
Yeah, I really get that. He also played on Bertha de Cool, I think, with the Gil Evans thing. And I mean, he just, you know, really, he was right there in the thick of, like, some of the most groundbreaking stuff in jazz, you know, and really bebop as it evolved was what John Lewis was right there, you know. So, I mean, of course, you know, you wanted to have him on the arrange some music for you. Because I think also another thing that was interesting as you think about, you know, what is jazz? You know, is jazz really arrangements of popular music, you know, or derangements, if you will? You always want to have somebody who's going to give you a little something extra, give you a little a look that's, you know, intelligent and thoughtful, and that's what he was able to do. And so I'm sure whenever he played with people, they were always like, wow, you know, look what he's listening to, what he's playing. And this, that's a neat arrangement or a neat way to think of this. And I think it influenced everybody around him. And yet he really was rooted in bebop and rooted in the music in such a beautiful way. I mean, I think I read somewhere that he taught Milt Jackson and Percy Heath to read, you know, which I don't know. I don't know if that's true. Maybe they just got better because they read a lot with him. I really don't know. But all I can say is that he was pushing that mantra, if you will, you know, hey, let's do some creative arrangements. And that, you know, if you follow that through, you see everybody from Art Blakey to Coltrane, everybody took that on and said, you know, we're not just going to play a standard the way we heard it on the radio. We're going to do something fresh with it. We're going to do something. There's always going to be an arrangement. There's always going to be something that we do that's going to surprise you or be a reflection of who we are and what we bring to the table. And so, I don't know. That to me is of course, Ella Fitzgerald would want to play with him. Of course, Miles or Gil Evans would want to play with him because they're, you know, he's bringing that intelligence, like I said, and compositional, you know, tools to the party.
In the early 1920s, when John lost his father and his mother decided we're moving to Albuquerque, clearly family was the real lodestone there. Mm-hmm. But also was the fact that even in the early 1920s, Albuquerque was one of the most successfully blended, polyglot, multi-ethnic communities.
Wow.
And the south side of Albuquerque, where John Lewis grew up, even then had a heavily Latino population as well as an African-American population as well as a Caucasian population. Mm. And certainly John Lewis in his music drew from all of them.
Yeah. One of the we're doing a couple of pieces. There's one record he has. I think it's called The Sheriff. And we're doing a few pieces from that. And it's all the sort of Western kind of jazz influence. But it's – yeah. It's Albuquerque is ever since I've been in New Mexico, Albuquerque is interesting to me because it's got a different kind of historical ghetto, you know, for me that I'm just, you know, I love ghettos, but I love the cultural richness that it brings to a society. And you know, Albuquerque definitely has that. I play a lot with African Americans in, you know, all over the world, but the ones in Albuquerque are unique, you know, and it's a special feeling, you know, that you just don't find in other cities. And like you said, the influence of Latinos, and I mean, that's a whole nother, you know, ghetto and style and feeling, and it's you know, New Mexico just has its own food, its own, you know, flavor that it brings to everything, and that includes the music, you know. So it's fun to be connected to that and bring some of that to the music, you know, now that I've lived here for 9 years almost.
So. John Rangel, thanks so much. We'll be listening, David, on Saturday, May 3rd.
All right.
Once again, John Rangel and his tribute trio, expanded to MJQ size, will be performing in Albuquerque this Saturday at the South Broadway Cultural Center as part of a birthday tribute to pianist John Lewis. Tickets are available by calling the Outpost Performance Space at 268-0044 or visiting the website outpostspace.org. After this break, I'll be talking with Vadim Kholodenko, the winner of the 2013 Van Cliburn Award.